Welcome to Unspoken Conversations with Candace, where we talk openly about taboo topics in order to spark difficult and uncomfortable conversations, where we allow a safe place for anyone who has had trauma to be heard. Unspoken Conversations with Candace is about speaking your truth by using your voice because you matter. Welcome to another episode of Unspoken Conversations with Candace. I'm very excited to have this next guest in my home studio here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. This episode, I'm going to title it as such, and it will be titled, I Shall Not Be Named, But You Can Call Me Chica. So my guest, her name, pretty much anonymous, but we're going to call her Chica for this episode. And I just kind of want to call out, this is a safe place for any survivor to come and speak their truth. And I'm really honored to have Chica here today. She's been wanting to come on the podcast. Her and I had connected about a year and a half ago, and she has a very powerful story. She will share her story, but she's not ready to be public. And that is the truth to some survivor stories, and it's okay. I think this is her first step, and I am so honored that she's sharing the first step with me in her journey. I give her a lot of credit and props because I don't know if the audience knows this, my listeners, but the average age for a survivor to come out and speak their truth, I found out was 52 years old. So there's a lot of survivors that carry it, sometimes never tell, wait till they're on their deathbed to tell, or they wait until they're older in their lives, probably maybe after their abusers or the ones who hurt them are no longer living. So I was kind of doing my own research. So again, thank you for being here. But I wanted to just share that with the listeners to kind of speak to and call out Chica being in my podcast studio today to tell her story more in anonymous fashion. And this is new for me, so I have to make sure I don't use her name because we're going to call her Chica. So let me introduce Chica to my audience, my listeners here. So Chica is a nonprofit healthcare professional with a passion to serve the community. Her accomplishments have come harder than it does for others. As a survivor of childhood trauma who is dealing with some to this day, she shares her story as an example that despite your past and all the barriers in one's life, you can accomplish your dreams. Your circumstances do not dictate your future. Amen to that. I believe that wholeheartedly. Amen. Raised in a single parent minority household by a mother who worked hard, low wage jobs to provide, she, Chica, encountered many risks and was an easy target. So it kind of sets the premise for you being here today to share your story. Again, I just want to say thank you so much for being here today. Really do appreciate it.
And thank you, Candace, so much for having me on your show. I'm very honored. And this is a huge step for me. It's mm-hmm. not something that I've talked to a lot. So I'm super excited to be here. And you know, and this is part of my continuing healing path.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, again, you know, the podcast really was a spinoff the book Unspoken, which is my story of my abuse as a child, being molested by two family members. And that's kind of what connected us is me sharing my story openly with you in a, we were virtual at the time. Yes. And I came in and I kind of shared my story and boom, it was instant connection because you could relate.
Yeah.
And, you know, statistics show 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys by the time they're 18, some sort of assault or rape or child abuse or types of abuse will be impaired on that child. So you're here, Chica, today to talk about your story of, you know, sharing your story openly and honestly about your abuse, you know, how old you were, you know, was it someone you knew? So I'm going to let you go ahead and share your story with as much as you want for the audience to hear.
Okay. Thank you, Candace. So I was actually really, really young when I had this happen to me. And it was sort of the worst of what I had happened to me. But then I had things occur as I grew up and got older. But again, you know, going back to my bio, I was raised by a mom, you know, Hispanic immigrant came to this country. She, you know, she was working those hardworking, backbreaking jobs. She was making low wages, but then she was sort of forced to, do I go to work or do I stay home and take care of my kids? You can't do both and provide for your family, right? So she did the best that she could, but we spent a lot of time alone, my siblings and me. And so it just made it easy for those people who are looking for an opportunity to prey upon us. And me being the only girl in my household, I was the one, you know, that happened to experience things. So it is a family member of my mother's. He's a second or third cousin of hers. And we were visiting my mother's aunt, and she was my godmother. And I remember that they had a section of their home that was closed off and separated by doors and walls. So you had like the kitchen and the living area. And then on the other side of the walls were like some bedrooms and like a living room or whatever. And so she had an older son and a tenant that lived in that area. And I remember he was playing Atari, which is the popular game back then, right? Before Nintendo PlayStation and all this stuff.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
So he was playing, and I remember, you know, first it was like, hey, you know, do you want to come play with me? And I'll show you how to play this game, and, you know, to sort of gain my trust. And so he gains my trust, and then after a while, he's like, well, why don't you come sit on my lap? And so I don't know any better. I was like 4 years old, maybe. And, you know, so I come, and I sit on his lap, and we're playing the game, and then all of a sudden, he starts feeling me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he starts feeling me, and I was just, like, getting weird about it, but I didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to react. I didn't know what was going on. And, you know, I hadn't really been around a lot of guys, especially not older. My dad was in and out of the picture. And when he was, we never had like that closeness, mm-hmm. any type of affection to know what was appropriate and what wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just really strange. And I didn't say anything. And then it got worse, you know, where he stopped the game and he was like, oh, well, you know, come over here. And, you know, started to remove my pants and my underwear. And he started feeling me first, you know, with his hands and stuff. And then mm-hmm. it got to the point where there was some
sexual
abuse. And
right.
I remember I cried, I screamed, you know, because it hurt. And I put my clothes on really fast because he got scared that I did that. And obviously people were going to hear it. We weren't alone in the house.
Right.
My mom was in the kitchen with my godmother. His sister was in the kitchen with them, you know, like my siblings were around. So we weren't alone in the house by any means.
Mm-hmm.
But he just took advantage of the fact that I was the only person in there with him and nobody seemed to, you know, be watching over me.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember I ran crying and locked myself in a bathroom. And I remember peeing and I could see all kinds of blood and I was scared. I was screaming, freaking out. And then I remember my mom came to the door and I wouldn't say anything to her. And I would just tell her, leave me alone, go away. And so it was my mother's cousin, his sister, that came. And I had a very good relationship with her. She was a disabled individual, but I had a very good relationship with her. And I felt comfortable with her. And, you know, she sort of coaxed me into allowing her to come into the bathroom. And I was able to sort of share with her what had happened to me. And she started crying and I'm so sorry. You're so young and I wish you didn't have to go through this. And she shared that she had something similar to that happen to her with one of her grandparents.
Oh, wow.
And so that was like, oh, but anyway, you know, she was like, okay, here's what we're going to do. You know, I'm going to go get you some stuff. We're going to give you a bath. I'm going to clean you up. We're going to throw this clothes away and we're going to watch a movie. Like, you know, she tried to take care of me and soothe me and make me feel better. And so I remember that we just didn't talk about it. It wasn't until days later that my mom, you know, was like, well, what happened? And then I tried to explain. She's like, oh, no, are you sure that that's what happened? Are you sure that, you know, you're not making things up? It's really, like, she was really dismissive of it.
Yeah, and that's so painful. So let me take a step back, only because I can so relate to the private room. So in my book, I talk about the infamous television room where I was watching TV with my uncle. He was sitting in a chair and I'm on the floor, so we're at a distance. And then slowly but surely, there's different times when I visited, I'd sit on the lap and, oh, your hair's so pretty, or, oh, you look so mm-hmm. beautiful, mija. And just different, building my trust and sitting in my lap. And then, again, fingers down the pants or never penetration to what you experience, but still groping and touching. But I remember the door slowly but surely shutting to where I could still hear what was going on with family, my grandma and my stepdad at the time, Fred, and then my mom. And just always thinking in my head, like, how come they're not checking on me? How come they're not seeing if I'm okay? And again, that trust just goes right out the window. So kudos to your aunt, not to call out disabled, mm-hmm. your aunt to say, Miha, I believe you. I mean, in so many words, because it happened to her, so she could relate. She felt bad for you. But then almost to the point of, well, we're just not going to talk about it. We're going to sweep it under the rug. And then here comes your mom and doesn't really address it either. So that's so heartbreaking because we want people to believe us. So please continue on more with your mom now. How does that change? So she just dismisses it and you never talk about it again?
So, you know, she just sort of dismissed it. And so I didn't bring it up. And so I remember in the next time that came around, my dad came around, you know, because he would come in and out. As I said, he worked out of state most of the time. So he'd be in and out of our lives and he'd be in for, you know, weeks at a time, maybe a month or two, and then he'd take off. So I remember that he came in and I remember telling him. And he had a fit. He was really, really upset. And he went to my mom and you know, and she was like, well, you weren't there. And it turned into one of their, you know, domestic disputes of well, I'm the single parent and you're out of the house. And so it completely went away and they really didn't deal with the situation itself. And then I remember, you know, my dad was only there for maybe a couple weeks longer. I do remember while he was there, like he would not let me out of his sight.
That's good.
I remember he hugged me and he said, I'm so sorry. You know, I should have been there for you. Please forgive me. And he was like, I'm sorry. You're going to have to learn how to take care of yourself. I can't be with you all the time.
Mm-hmm. That's important for you to have heard that from your dad, you know?
Oh, for sure.
And to me, it's like pretty much saying, I believe you.
Yeah.
And forgive me, like asking you right off the bat, like that he wasn't there, right?
Yeah. And to be fair, like 4 years old, you don't have a lot of realization of things. There's not a lot that you can comprehend, especially when it comes to situations like that. So for one, like my mom's cousin, you know, to sort of normalize the situation. Oh, I went through something like that too, but here, let's just take you a bath and watch a movie and you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So she like turned it into like, oh, it's normal. Right.
Right.
But then my dad's reaction was opposite. He was very upset about it and he was apologizing. It should have never happened. So then I was like confused.
Right.
Right. Because then
did anybody ever confront the family member?
So my dad tried.
OK.
He didn't get anywhere.
OK.
But I remember that he told my brothers what had happened, especially my oldest brother. He's almost 9 years my senior. And, you know, with my dad out of the picture, my brother really filled in and sort of raised us, you know, with my mom. And so he let him know what happened. And so I know that my brother, after that point, he was very cautious. And if anybody ever came around, he would make sure that either I was at a friend's house where somebody was taking care of me, or I was like right there by his side doing something.
Right.
So he made sure that I at least wasn't alone when he was there because it hurt my brother. You know, he took it very personal and he felt bad that it happened. Mm-hmm. And we were there. Other people were there and nobody did anything.
Right.
Right.
Which, again, want to change the narrative. We want people that when it happens, there should be a protocol, procedure, a process. Yeah. But because, again, we have been our culture and it doesn't discriminate. It doesn't even matter your background. It's just this whole it's uncomfortable. We're not going to talk about it or we just shouldn't address it or it's family. Get over it. Like, no, that's not appropriate.
Yeah. And I think in my mom's case, it was like, well, it's family. It's the only family that I have here. You're my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
She's the closest tie I have to my family. It's the only person I have. So it's just not going to happen. So she didn't want to accept it. I think part of her not, you know, talking about it and dismissing it was her not wanting to accept it.
Right. Because then she leans on these individuals to help her care or take care of or pay bills. Who knows what the situation was. She's relying on other people to assist.
Yep.
And therefore, now if I break that bond or if I damage the relationship, not even understanding the damage that had been done to you, which again goes back to this generational, hate to say it, the curse or taboo things that happen, and we don't heal if we don't address it.
Yeah, we certainly don't. And so it just sort of happened that way. And there were other things that happened living, you know, with just my brothers and we lived in rough neighborhoods. We lived in the projects. We lived my mom ended up buying a house, but it was in a part of town that was sort of having all kinds of issues. There were neighbors. I remember an older sibling of a neighborhood friend of ours. He chased me around their house and I went and hid in a bathroom or something. And I started yelling until his dad came. And I don't know what he wanted to do to me. I just know that I was scared out of my mind. I had other people who tried to do things through me out to me throughout the years. I remember friends of my older brother, they would say, well, if you don't let me touch you, if you don't let me do this, or if you don't do this to me, I'm going to go tell your brother this, or I'm going to go tell your mom that. And you don't know any better, and you don't have anything to turn to, that sometimes you give in to things and then you mm-hmm. realize that it was wrong because you feel it.
Right.
Whether you've been taught one way or the other, you feel it in the pit of your stomach.
Right.
There's something not right about mm-hmm. what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
From that experience, it's always marked my life in the sense that I don't trust people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who you are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't care how saintly you are. I just don't trust you.
Right.
It's not anything against you. I just learned from a very young age that even those are supposed to be closest to you and protect you, don't. And mm-hmm. so how do you trust that?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, and that's really what they say with the statistic with child sexual abuse, is that it doesn't discriminate. Like I said, that it's usually, they say, by people that are strangers or someone you don't know. And that is completely opposite. They are our friends, partners, family members, community members, right? 93% of children who are victims know who their abuser are, right? And less than 10% are abused by a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more common for you to be abused by someone you love and respect, or that holds a position of power in your household and whatnot, that they will be the ones to harm the child. So
yeah.
Both you and I can completely relate to that. So let's talk about, because then how old, like, did you move out at a certain age? When did you get married at a young age? Did you have kids at a young age? And then how did that affect, like, relationships? Because I know I didn't always make good decisions with boys in general. I was very promiscuous. I felt, because what was happening with me at home with Fred, that, well, then, you know, I can choose to be with a boy, so I didn't have to be forced to be with this person. So I was loosey-goosey and not proud of it, you know, and nobody really knew what was going on. But mm-hmm. it was a direct, me being promiscuous was a direct result of what was happening at home. It honestly was a cry for help, but there were no counselors or people to understand, like, why is Candace being that way? Or is there something going on? Nobody called me out on my stuff. And I wonder if somebody would have, if there would have been some sort of training, or Candace, are you struggling? Because I used to come to school late sometimes because Fred was abusing me in the mornings before school, because he would take me to school. I'd be fighting with him sometimes, leave me alone, you know? So I struggled a lot just because it was so stressful. My mom would go to work and that was his time. So, ugh.
Yeah.
I hate even thinking about it because those memories are still vivid.
It's repulsive. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for me, it was just something that was brushed under the rug. I just sort of grew up with it. I was very defensive of people. I didn't like people touching me. I still, to this day, I'm very iffy about people touching me, especially mm-hmm. someone comes up behind me, you might get socked in the eye and it's going to hurt. Because
and I saw you today when you came over, right? I said, can I hug you? Because I know that for me, myself, it's always to ask the person, is it okay yes. if I give you a hug? Because there's some of that permission.
And I appreciate that mm-hmm. because there are some people, especially in the Hispanic culture, you want to see people, and some people, they don't even know you. They're related to somebody. They want to hug you and give you a kiss on the cheek. And I'm like, no.
You're in my space.
Mm-hmm. Like, please don't. So I really, really appreciate that. But it, you know, it's marked my way in that sense that I don't trust people. I'm always thinking of, where do you get out? You know, I remember when I was in school, I always sat in an area where I was at the edge and I could make a run for it if I needed to. School for me was the place where I felt the safest. I had a great relationship with a lot of my teachers, and I was able to talk to them about a lot of things. There was a lot that I didn't share for the same reason, because I realized that things could get my mom in trouble is what I always thought, right? So there's things I shouldn't tell them. You know, I told them what I could and tried to have a good relationship with them, and they were very supportive of me. And academia was sort of what helped me heal, you know, to learn that I could do something, you know? So I was really into sports as a kid, and I really liked to participate in spelling bees and, you know, and have the good grades and stuff like that. So I really focused on a lot of that. And my troubles, again, didn't start until I was in middle school. When you get to that age and you hit puberty and, you know, things start growing and your body starts looking differently, and then people start looking at you differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get ugly looks from girls and women, because all of a sudden you have a figure and, you know, guys are paying attention to you and, you know, some of them don't like it, but then.
Well, and you sometimes don't even want that type of attention. You can't help, right? Right. Because of what your experience was, you were trying to avoid it at all costs, but these girls not knowing, right?
It made it really uncomfortable. For example, you know, my brother being 9 years older than me. So by the time I was in middle school, he was in his middle of his 20s. Mm-hmm. Right. So then a lot of the people that lived in the neighborhood were his age and they were his friends. And sometimes they would come over and if, you know, my brother wasn't around, they'd be like, damn, girl, you looking fine. And, you know, stuff like that. And I would be like, OK, and then just sort of walk away. It was really uncomfortable. And I think I was in seventh grade and there was a neighborhood kid and she was in some of my classes. And I went over to her house and sometimes we would do that. We liked to watch the movie Grease together or do other things. Right. And it was her and she was being raised by her grandparents with her other siblings. I remember it was her and I, and it was just her grandpa was home and she went into the bathroom and I was standing in the kitchen and her grandpa came in and it wasn't uncommon for him. Hey, you know, give me a hug. He used to call me school teacher because he said I look like a school teacher with my ponytail and my glasses. Mm-hmm. And I remember he, you know, I gave him a hug and then he wouldn't let go. And he goes, I'll give you $20 if you let me suck on your breasts. I remember I hit him and I ran.
I ran
for the door and I ran all the way home. And then my friend called me and I said, listen, I'm sorry I left your house, but I have to tell you that your grandpa offered me $20, you know, for this. And I hit him and I left.
Mm.
And she started crying on the phone. She was like, I'm so sorry. Please, please don't stop being my friend. I'm so sorry. You know, I never went back to her house.
Mm.
It was just so uncomfortable because it was someone that I didn't feel unsafe with.
Mm-hmm.
And yet he somehow found that I was vulnerable and he could take advantage of that. And it was just so sickening.
How do they point us out? That's the thing. You know, is there like, because you don't wear trauma or
it's,
you don't wear
like
it
you're
on,
wearing
you're a magnet or something.
It's like you're wearing something. There's some sort of sign on your forehead or your persona that they know to single you out. They know that they can get away with certain things. So things started getting weird then and then comments from, you know, neighborhood people. And then, you know, at school, boys would notice me too. And growing up with brothers, I always grew up with the guys and it was like normal to hang out with them and this. But then I noticed they changed with me, you know, the way that they looked at me, the remarks that they made and this and that was just completely different. So it wasn't until eighth grade that I was tutoring other students who were struggling. And I ended up tutoring an individual. She had developmental disabilities and she was struggling with math. And I was helping her with her math. And so she would ask me to come to her house and tutor her because she couldn't stay at the school.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And she was living with her grandparents and her mother. So I would do that. And on one of those occasions, I met her older brother.
Mm.
And so then it turned out that he knew my older brother and we, you know, he started hanging out with us and this and that. And then little by little, he drew me in. And then he started touching me and kissing me and started doing things. And then it got to the point where we ended up having sex. And I didn't feel right about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I felt that it was wrong. I felt dirty.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I was like, whatever, you know, because I remember I talked to my friends. I had a good friend who lived across the street. And she was like, oh, girl, you're so lucky. You know, everybody likes him and this and that. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess it's normal, right? I guess this is a good thing, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a popular guy and he wants to be with me or whatever. So I didn't really think of it. But, it sort of started with him and then it was on and off with him. And then there were other guys that I sort of hung out with and made out with, but never really got to have sex with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up being pregnant from this individual. And that's when things got real that I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to be a parent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how am I going to deal with this? I have a kid to take care of now, right? So how does that change? So I remember I made the decision that that was going to end the relationship because I couldn't be with somebody like that. You know, so I ended up being a single mother at 15.
Mm-hmm.
I had been promiscuous for like the last year and a half since I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
And not yet. I think my first son, he was supposed to be born at a later date. He ended up coming early, which is actually pretty common if you're a teenager and you end up pregnant. It's actually pretty common to have a premature child. And so he was born about 2 months early.
Mm.
So he was born a few weeks of me being shy of my 15th birthday. So by 14, I had my first kid. So it wasn't very long after that that I met my current partner. And I thank God that I met him, because I always tell my kids, you know, now as an adult and having learned all the things that I have and going through my education as I have, I know that had I not met my partner and stayed with him, that I would have probably ended up having, I don't know how many kids from how many people,
mm-hmm.
and going down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. So when you met your current partner, who you're with, are you guys married?
Yeah.
You're married. Okay. So your husband.
Yeah.
So did you tell him right away what had transpired? Did it take you a while to trust him, or was it just like you felt that instant trust and because you sometimes you just know
yeah.
that this person isn't here to harm me versus maybe what you felt with the other one who was kind of.
No, I think with him, I really felt peace. Like I knew that was my safe place. That's where I could be at peace. That I would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that to me was strange, because I didn't know that feeling with anybody.
Okay.
I was always on alert mm-hmm. with everything and everybody. You know, it didn't matter who you were.
Mm-hmm.
And so to actually feel that peace with somebody was like, wow, this is nice. But it took me a while to share with him. There were little things that he noticed, like, you know, the fact that if he came up to like want to scare me and me hitting him, like really hitting him and being like, hey, I didn't do anything. You didn't have to hit me for that reason. I'd be like, so I had to sit him down one day and I had to explain, listen, So this is what happened to me. This is why I'm like that. It's not easy for me to share. I don't like to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But now you know it's not anything against you. This is just how I am.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's just part of, like I said, it's more your mechanism for survival, or like you said, defense, protecting yourself. That's really what it is. You're protecting yourself from getting hurt or harmed.
Yeah.
And you're just on guard because you just don't know what's coming at you at which angle. So, I mean, I think that's natural. So as you were developing, you know, you have your relationship. How many more children you had?
So I actually have a total of 5 kids.
5 children. So I'm sure then transforming into a family unit, having children, and then my cat is now in the studio. Just in case you hear meow, everybody, it's just my cat wanting to be on the podcast with me and Chica today. So how was it raising your family? Because if you had trust issues with people, I can only imagine with your children and now your kids, protecting them to the highest level.
Right. Oh, I became to the point where I was the fierce mother and I would not let my kids out of my sight.
Mm-hmm.
I was very cautious about who I would have relationships with, even as a friend, and who would come over to the house. Both my husband and me were cautious for the same reason. We didn't really like people knowing where we lived. I never let my kids stay over at anybody's houses for anything. If they went to a party, I wanted to meet the parents beforehand. I wanted to know who was living there, how long it was going to be, make sure that they weren't going to be alone and they would only be able to participate for so long before I was like, that's enough, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want to put them at risk for anything. And I remember, you know, my kids, my daughter, she got older. She had a lot of invitations, you know, for sleepovers. And I told her, no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell them, you can be with them and you can hang out with them and this and that, but you will not ever sleep at anybody's house.
Mm-hmm. I'll pick you up around 10, 9, whatever. When everyone's getting ready to go down for bed, I'm coming to pick you up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I can't let you do that. And you know, I really didn't explain myself to my kids.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until they were teenagers, you know, that I was like, listen, you guys have to understand that I was like that and still am very protective of you guys because I went through things mm-hmm. and I didn't explain exactly what, but I told them I went through things, a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
things that I thank God I was able to protect you from mm-hmm. and that you don't need to know, but you just need to know that what I do is for a good reason and to protect you.
Right.
Because I don't want you to experience what I went through. Nobody mm-hmm. should have to do that.
Right. Right.
You know, and my role as a parent is I have to protect you. I have to do what I have to do. And people to look at me and give me ugly looks, or you guys want to yell at me and tell me you hate me, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know that you're going to be okay. At the end of the day, you'll get over it. Right.
Yeah, right.
And other people, they have nothing to say. It's not their business. It's, you're my kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they know that it was for a reason, but it's just one of those things. I never had babysitters. If my kids were ever in any type of thing, it was a daycare setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I always knew to know all the teachers and talk about everything. And
did you have a daycare with cameras?
Yes.
Okay.
Where I you made could sure that there were
yeah.
cameras. And
that's
I
awesome.
Made sure to, I'd call throughout the day. And sometimes I want to talk to my daughter. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to my daughter. I mm-hmm. want to hear from her that she's doing okay. Mm-hmm. You know, this, and I would ask my kids questions. Mm-hmm. Did anybody ever try anything? Did anybody? And I would tell my kids, if anybody, I knew, I do remember, you know, when they were really young, I would tell them before they went to school, if anybody ever comes at you and they start touching you other than hugging you or, you know, talking about removing your clothes or anything like that, you tell them no, you hit them, you yell, you spit at them, you whatever, and tell somebody. Mm-hmm. You do not ever let anyone come anywhere near you. Mm-hmm. I don't care who they are. And you can tell me and you can tell dad, we're not going to be mad at you. It's not anything that you do, but there are people that will try to do things and I want to make sure that they don't. Mm-hmm. So I remember they looked at me funny, but they were like, okay, mom, we'll tell you. You know, so whatever. Thankfully, my kids were very cautious. And there were some behaviors that they saw from some teachers. I remember my son was in third grade. And there was a male teacher. He happened to be my daughter's teacher. And my son had said, I was in the library, Mom, and I don't like the guy. He always has, like, the strange behavior, especially around girls. But me and my friend, we saw him on the computer, and he was looking at naked people. Mm. And this was a school computer in the school library, and wow. He was a teacher mm-hmm. in elementary school.
And the kids caught him.
And
or saw what he was doing.
Yeah. So I remember I told my son, what did you do? Did you tell somebody? He said, yeah. Me and my friend, we went to the office, and we talked to the principal, because I remember that you told me we need to tell people if tell something somebody. Like that happened. And so I was like, so proud.
You should be. You coach your children at a young age yeah. to let them know that if something were to transpire, that to go yeah. tell somebody. Yeah. And if they didn't even want to tell the teacher and come home and tell you, you would have taken action.
Yeah.
For the fact, the mere fact, I believe you. What you're going to tell me is not what you're doing. It's what that other person's doing to you that's totally wrong.
So I was really proud. And I remember that the school sent out a letter that there had been an incident, that he had been, you know, removed from the school. And they were since talking to his students and any other kids that he may have had interactions with just to make sure that nothing had happened. Mm-hmm. And it was fortunate enough that nobody reported anything. Nothing seemed to have happened or transpired past that.
Right.
You know, but it's scary. You know, you let your kids out there into other these environments, and you trust teachers especially to take care of your kids, and then look, you know, things happen.
Right.
So I'm glad that him and his friend were able to speak up and probably avoided who knows what.
Right.
You know, because had that let go, and he would have, you know, maybe evolved into trying something.
Right.
And so fortunately that didn't happen. I can tell you that throughout my marriage, my husband is from a big family. Mm-hmm. And so he's had people who've come to live with us, and he's got a majority of brothers. And I remember at one time when I was pregnant with my third daughter, is when they are around most. And, you know, I remember sitting down two of his brothers who live with us. And I remember telling them, listen, you guys live in this house. And I will tell you right now, if you ever, ever come near my child mm-hmm. and I find out that you did something, I swear to God, I will chop it off of you. And I will feed it to you. You will stay away Chica from took my it there. Child.
Chica took it there. She was like,
I did, because I was
watch.
Like, I don't care who you are. And they looked at me and then I laughed. I said, I'm sorry, but I have to warn you. I'm serious. Mm-hmm. I do not want to know that anybody took advantage of my kid.
Right.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? Did your mom ever watch your children? Or because of what happened to you, you just didn't trust your mom anymore?
I absolutely, to this day, I don't feel comfortable with my kids being around her, and they're adults.
Okay. Yeah, which we'll get into that soon when we get to talking about forgiveness, because I know that's a huge topic too. But let's transition to mental health, just awareness. I know you and I had some conversation about just the impact that it has on you know, as a survivor of abuse, child abuse, sexual molestation, all of that with family members. It's you realize as you develop and grow, even into your adult, you get into a professional career, you start mm-hmm. to be in the workforce, and then you develop. I know I realized patterns with how I interacted with people, if I was professional or not, or it does carry over into your
day-to-day
makeup, your day-to-day yeah. life, right? Yeah. And so I know you talked about the ACEs, which yeah. is adverse childhood experiences. And I remember you said you were going through school and yeah. there were topics that you were reading and you were like, they're talking about me. So yeah. let's talk about that, like yeah. just that whole aha moments and how things were just starting to, all the connections of dots coming to you.
So during my courses in school, in taking the different types of courses in developmental and psychology and mental health and public health and whatnot, I remember, you know, reading sections that were related to child abuse and sexual abuse and victims of it and sort of what transpires, the aftermath, the impact that it has short term, long term. And I remember reading it and I was like, adverse childhood experiences. And then they were like, so sexual abuse or domestic abuse or this type of abuse. And then you have these types of behaviors where, you know, you have issues trusting, you can promiscuity, you can get into alcohol, drugs, rebellious behavior, like there were anxiety, there were all these things. And I was like, wait, like this is talking about me. Mm-hmm. This, like, I'm a statistic. This is me that they're referring to because I experienced promiscuity. I mm-hmm. experienced trust issues. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, 13, 14 going to parties. I was drinking. I didn't do drugs, thank God.
I tested with them, but I didn't do them to the extent where I got hooked. Thank God. You know, I think me being promiscuous was the biggest downfall. And then just being that party girl with alcohol and tasting drugs, like, it wasn't a good look for me. That's all I got to say about that.
Yeah. And then the anxiety, the being on edge all the time and stuff like that, it was something that I was like, oh, like there's a reason I went through all that. Like, wow, this is like, it's all related to that. Mm-hmm. It was sort of a healing moment and a teaching moment for me to learn from the textbook, what I was reading, material that I was covering, how it had impacted my life, and sort of look back at the lens and figure out why I had done things, what my behaviors, my reactions, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then to be able to sort of walk myself through things to improve and to, and I think you and I had talked about as parents, you have to get to a point where you have to relinquish that control and sort of let your kids be independent. Mm-hmm. That was one of the hardest things for me as a parent to do because I was always afraid for what might happen to them. Child.
Mm-hmm. I can totally, that my adult children probably tell you, she still tries to tell us what to do. I'm sorry, girls, but yes, being a young mom, you know, like I said, I think I did so much for them and not things with them. Like I worked all the time to try to provide and make things easier for them. I always say, thank God, because it takes a village to raise children. I'm very thankful for my mom and for Randy's parents, Diane and Alex, and how much they were such an influence on my kids. They were more of the stability and structure that my kids needed, that they were there for them. Because I was so young and I was dumb and paying attention to the wrong things and not really focusing on maybe what their needs are. Because I see them being parents and I'm so proud what the things that they're doing. And they may think that I don't agree or I have my own, maybe they think I'm being judgmental or whatever, but no, they're on the right path. They're doing a great job and everybody's on their own journey. You know, when it comes to parenting, how you parent is going to be different than how your parents parented. And that's how it should be. Be bigger and better and do better than what I did. But, you know, we're all a work in progress is what I feel. And I feel with trauma, it's an ongoing healing process. You never really get over it, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Because I still have triggers. Like, so I'm doing my audiobook and I've been trying to work on that for months. And I realized that it's hard to go from the beginning to the end, right? Because the end is the highlight. It's the wins, you know, full circle blessings. And so I think I'm going to start reading it from backwards forward because maybe then I can get through it because it's been very traumatic and I started having nightmares and hot sweats and things just were starting to happen in my mind. And I hate feeling like that.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
It's really, really uncomfortable and it's really hard for people who don't know to understand something like that. But
yeah,
you know, going back to my education, looking at the things, and I realized that it's the number of people who live with as a survivor of adverse childhood experiences is huge. Mm-hmm. You know, let alone in the state of Wisconsin, there's 59% of adults have experienced at least one adverse childhood experience.
Right.
You know, then you have statistics that tell you that one in six people have experienced it, one in four people, or the more adverse childhood experiences you have, the more likely you are to experience adverse health effects long-term. Mm. So you're looking at mental health issues, you're looking at chronic disease, so heart disease, diabetes, addiction, drug abuse is real common, alcoholism, being in domestic
relationships, thinking that it's normal.
Yep. You know, experiencing more and more abuse,
like, or even committing suicide where they just don't make it. They
self-harm, you know, is one of the things people committing suicide, or ultimately they die a younger death.
Mm-hmm.
It all stems from those things, you know. So one of the things for me was realizing that and looking at things and thinking, wow, I'm really blessed that I went through that. Never had 1 ounce of therapy. Didn't really talk to anybody about it. Nobody processed it or anything. And yet I managed to raise my kids. I managed to make it through school. I managed to create a life, to be a successful person, to raise successful children, to have a happy marriage, to not have go through all those things, and to avoid my kids having to experience any of the things that I went through. It's just huge to me because I sit there and think the many, many ways that my life could have been, and I may not have been here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can tell the stories of other people who were my age or younger, who experienced similar things either around the same age or older, and they're not in this world anymore.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard. That's really hard. Because like you said in your bio, your circumstances do not dictate your future. Your testimony to that just in itself, and then to your kids being that role model that, well, if my mom went through some really tough times and, you know, she made my life a little bit easier and better. You're setting them up for success.
Yeah.
Right.
And part of, you know, the research in ACEs is they talk about resiliency,
mm-hmm.
you know, being, having those traits of resiliency, and that's, they're talking about me because despite everything that I went through and everything that was working against me, I managed to succeed like a weed.
Right. You grew.
You know, there was nothing that was going to take me down, and I managed to have a successful marriage. I managed to go to school even as an adult and complete my GED and go on to college. I now have a master's degree, looking forward to having a PhD someday. My kids are in college. You know, I work successfully, you know, all these great plans, and it's just amazing, you know, that resiliency exists. I'm example of
example,
it.
Yeah.
And that I have shared with my kids that, when, you know, when they've talked about saying, you know, well, life is hard and this and all, I said, well, boo hoo, you know, you have to be thankful.
Don't cry me a river. Do not cry me a river.
Thank God that you guys didn't have to experience everything that I have, and that your starting point in life is so much easier than mm-hmm. mine and your dad's.
Yep.
And that you guys have a support system, right? Because it just makes it so much easier for mm-hmm. you. So it may be hard, but it's not impossible. And just because you have obstacles, it shouldn't deter you.
Yeah.
And it's just something else to go over.
And you have to celebrate being resilient because there is just so much power. So you coming here and sharing the story, you're being resilient. You're stepping out of your comfort zone, coming here and speaking your truth, which is amazing. And I know you and I talk, mental health, I went to therapy, and I remember going to therapy. Marianne Jensen, my counselor, basically was like, Candace, it's not about your relationship. It's deeper than that. And then digging into the childhood and understanding the trauma. Then that's when it started to make sense. And she's like, you need to heal from that before you have to love yourself. Let go of the shame, let go of the guilt before you can really love anybody else or even give love or be receiving of love. Cause that was my biggest struggle. That was my biggest struggle is receiving love. I didn't love myself. So a transition to, and also going back to ACEs, we are going to put a lot of links in the show notes. So when your podcast episode is launched and live and public, I will put all these good resources in the show notes. So anyone listening that has had type of trauma or anything that's relatable to what you're hearing, I always on this podcast give tons of links for resources. So make sure you check those out. But let's transition to the book, because I know, so putting a plug for my book, Unspoken, available at www.candacesanchez.com. You can go to my store shop. I have a store on Shopify. You can shop online, purchase an autographed book through my store, or you can buy it off Amazon. So I'm going to ask you, were you able to read the book?
I have not.
Okay.
I want to.
Yep.
I'm a little afraid. I don't know how I'll react, what it's going to bring back. And it's been a long time. Like I said, it's not something that I've really talked about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see, but I do really want to.
Nope. And that's okay. Cause I think it's important again for the listeners to understand, like, when you are a survivor and you've gone through something similar and you read those words, it just really, it's like you're reliving your own trauma all over again. And it took me 3 years to write the book because of that exact reason. Even with the audiobook, hard for me to keep finishing and pushing because I was kind of feeling like, oh my, I'm reliving it all over again. And then I would start crying and then I would, you know, tremble and that little girl comes back and, you know, I get fearful. And so I just got to push through it. But so yeah, those never go away. So that's good. So thank you for your honesty about the book. And when, if you ever want me to read it to you, I will. And then we can have conversation about it.
Right.
let's transition to forgiveness. So with my mom, you know, she was married to Fred and I didn't tell my mom until pretty much Randy forced my hand, which was a good thing. My second daughter was born, Victoria, and it was right around Valentine's Day. And he was like, if you don't tell her, I'm going to tell her. I'll tell her what happened because I'm sick and tired of him being around my kids. And I was like, oh. So I remember telling my mom, I don't remember how I told her, where I told her, when I told her, in the moment I told her, but I told her. And then I know the next day Fred was no longer living with us. So she kicked him out. So someone did tell me, Candace, that should be, you know, commended. Your mom, obviously,
kudos,
she believed you, right,
because
that she did that. She took that step. And I know it was hard for her because, you know, she was with Fred for a very long time. And so I have forgiven. I don't put blame on my mom. I think she kind of knew something was going on, but there was never that direct conversation. My mom's very non-confrontational, so it's hard for her to have those conversations. And again, I think it's cultural, right? Not that she wanted to sweep it under the rug, but I just think it was too hard. Fred had instilled in me, like, if I told my mom, I'd be stuck with him anyways, or she'd have a nervous breakdown or something would happen to her and then I'd be stuck with him. So I kind of felt like maybe he would harm her or something would that was true. So I was scared. And then I remember Fred never admitted to my mom that he did this. So he denies it or has denied it to her. I know she's told me that he never said that he did it. But when I lived in Racine on Durand Avenue, he would cut my yard, my grass. And I used to let him, like, free labor is how I looked at it. And I know that probably sounds pretty shitty, but he was cutting my grass and I didn't have to do it, you know, but I never let him in the house. And then there was one day where he asked me, could he come in? And I remember, to your point, standing by the front door and let him sitting on my couch. But I was so close enough to the door that if he tried something, I could leave. Because I reverted back to that little girl. I was scared. And he sat down and he apologized to me. You know, he said, I'm sorry for what happened. I'm sorry for what I did to you. And that was all I needed to hear. I got my apology. And most survivors, they don't hear that ever from their abuser.
I haven't. I won't.
And honestly, you know, I feel, I hate to say, fortunate enough that I got it. And I was able, I feel like, to move on and let go. I still carry Fred's last name. I mean, I have his last name and the name represents everything that I've ever been through. Resiliency, I'm strong, you know, and there were so many other family members that I love and respect that in the Sanchez family, you know, that name means something to me on the whole other aspect as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That doesn't, again, define everything about me. And then now, you know, when I think about forgiveness, I'm just glad that I had that. And as you were saying, are you open to forgiveness or do you just feel like that's just
I processed it. I think it wasn't until maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I got really into my faith and started attending church regularly and had some conversations with my faith leader and a group that I was in. It was an adult group or whatever. We were learning about religion and whatnot. And I felt really comfortable. And so there were just, you know, some questions back and forth. But I remember having a conversation asking, well, what if someone really, really hurt you mm-hmm. and you were really, really wrong and you know that what they did was wrong and they deny it? They're never going to accept that they hurt you, but they did. How do you live with that? How do you forgive? How do you move on? Mm-hmm. And I remember having that conversation and getting those sort of, you know, recommendations on how to do it. And at some point I just sort of picked a day and I just sort of wrote down on a paper, I forgive you for what you did to me, for the harm that you caused. I'm upset that you're never going to accept it, but I forgive you regardless. I can't live with that grudge because it's not healthy for me.
Right. There's more power in it for us to forgive and let go, right? And you can move on and heal, yeah. Right, to the best of your ability.
So I remember doing that. And then my husband took the paper and he burned it. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of, you know, the healing process in that point. But yeah, you know, to this day, that person denies that they did anything and, mm-hmm. you know, they're living their life like nothing and they have their own kids now. And all I can think of, well, I hope that their kid didn't have to experience anything that I did.
Mm-hmm. I know that's always a thing too. I always wonder, was I the only one that he might have done this to or were there others or more? And,
yeah,
you know, that's always been a question. Does someone have that in common with me? And does it really matter, Candace? Like, why, you know, who cares? Move on kind of thing.
Yeah.
So thanks for sharing your thoughts on forgiveness. So in my book too, I'll talk about, I do talk about, I forgave, but I'll never forget. So that was like one of my chapters. And then my last chapter, I grew up thinking I was an only child, but I had tons of cousins right on the Sanchez side. And then also on my mom's, Sabala Garcia Vasquez, all my other cousins on my mom's side. I mean, we had tons of cousins and I grew up with a lot of family around me. And then in 2019, I found my biological father. And now there's 13 of us and my dad. My dad had 13 kids.
So, wow.
So I'm no longer an only child. So that is the best chapter ever, is I ended on a positive note in my book, Full Circle Blessings. So let's talk about your full circle blessings and like, where are you today? And what do you want to leave our listeners with?
What I would like to leave listeners with is, part of your healing process is talking about what happened to you and accepting it and knowing that it is the past and mm-hmm. it stays there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to come back. But most importantly is, what happens to you shouldn't define your life path. It shouldn't define what you can accomplish or your worth.
Mm-hmm.
And despite everything that I went through, you know, all of the adverse things going on in my life that worked sort of against me, that could have kept me down, you know, that I could have ended up so many ways. And like I mentioned, it would have been really common for someone like me to end up dead really young.
Right.
But thank God that I'm still here. I was resilient. I, you know, refuse to let that define me and my life. And I looked at the future and said, this is what I want to see. And I worked toward it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I worked really hard to go to school as a parent
mm-hmm.
and to work my schedule around their school schedule so that I didn't need any daycare services. You know, my husband was very supportive of that, and him working and me going to school. So we managed to make ends meet so that we can live a good life for our kids. We were, you know, we worked as partners together to raise our kids. So if I wasn't with him, he was with them. And whatnot. Nobody, we never went out anywhere to parties. We didn't go to the movies. We didn't have date night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Ours was sitting on the couch watching a movie and
family
the kids
night.
Were asleep. You know,
yeah.
That's just, we just accommodated our life to that. So I'm very thankful that despite all of that, I was able to show my kids and show everybody that you can experience bad things in your life. That doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make it your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly doesn't say that because of that, you shouldn't be able to accomplish things.
Right.
You know, so today I'm very thankful that I have my several degrees, 4 degrees currently. I have a wonderful profession that I work with. I have great community that I serve. I'm learning to serve a new community. I'm a huge advocate for anything health related. I have a soft spot for, you know, the Hispanic community, for the senior community. And I'm just blessed. You know, mm-hmm. This year I will be celebrating 25 years of marriage. We never had a honeymoon. We never had a marriage ceremony. We just really went to court. And
mm-hmm.
I remember carrying my son, and he was my witness at the courthouse. And then it wasn't until years ago that we finally got married to the church. And so I'm looking forward to celebrating that. It's a huge milestone.
It's a huge celebration.
For
and
someone
a win.
Like me,
yes.
You know, it's a huge milestone. I think more so than, you know, just being married 25 years. That's what all it represents.
Right, right.
You know, so many things that could have gone wrong. So many things that could have ended it.
Right.
And I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still very happy. And so I'm looking forward to celebrating that. I'm looking forward to celebrating, you know, all of my accomplishments. And I'm super proud as a parent to have set that example for my kids. And they're now either they've graduated college and they're working in their professions and they're making good money and living a good life, or they're in college and, you know, still fulfilling their dreams and learning how to be an adult and, you know, working on that independence. And yes, as a mom, you still want to tell your kids what to do.
That's all another episode.
It's just being a mom. But mm-hmm. I thank God that I'm still here and that I had the strength mm-hmm. to get through everything and to survive.
Well, Chica, it's been fantastic having you on my podcast. So I, again, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being vulnerable and having the courage to speak your truth here. I am so grateful that our paths crossed by divine design. We were destined to meet, and I fully believe that. And I look forward to the continued collaboration, partnership. You and I both have the love for community. Giving back is, I think, even another trait of ours, is we're so compassionate, want to help serve, right? And I think that's just part of our genetics and part of having that trauma. we're more empathetic. And I think that that's really the key, being change agents and ambassadors of change in this world. And it starts with true testimonies. And so very proud. And I'm so happy that when you do become a grandparent, you're going to be able to indulge in them grandkids, and your kids are going to be able to trust you, right? You didn't have that same type of trust for your own unit and your family, you know, because of what you went through, but at the same time, what you have to look forward to when your kids are ready, right? It's going to be such a beautiful moment.
And hopefully I don't have to take it there as far as warnings with anybody. I will yes. if I have to, but yes. Hopefully that's not the case.
Right. But then even, like I said, you've planted those seeds for your kids. They're, I'm sure, going to have that same type of conversation. But that's the beauty of what this work that we're doing, right, mm-hmm. is, and I'll put a plug, I'm doing September 17th of 2022, I'm bringing a walk to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It's going to be in Oak Creek on September 17th, 2022. I have partnered, I'm the event lead, partnered with a national organization called EndCan, E-N-D-C-A-N.org. And they are trying to bring national attention to ending child abuse and neglect. And so I partnered with them to bring a walk, and it's a walk together. So love to have you or your community either get a team, join a team, fundraise. Anybody who's an individual can purchase an individual ticket for $25 or sign up, and then you get a free t-shirt. But love to have you come out and support. That would be a great way to...
Looking forward to it.
Yes. Them. So we have tons of collaboration. So again, I will make sure to all the listeners to put all of the show notes to all of the links that you've shared related to the Adverse Childhood Experience, ACEs. And I did find a video. Laura Porter is actually the co-founder of ACE Interface LLC. She had a really good YouTube video that talked a lot about the trauma that you experience from when you're a child, if you're mm-hmm. a child, to your adults through the different stages and how that can affect you. And then the layers of type of trauma. So if you experience one and you experience another, just to your point. So I'm going to share all of that information. So again, just want to say thank you for being on my podcast, Unspoken Conversations with Candace. I release monthly episodes. So for all you listeners, make sure you follow my socials, stay connected with Unspoken Conversation with Candace. Chica, thank you for being here. And I just want to say thanks everyone for listening. Tune in next time. Have a good night. Thank you so much for listening to this conversation about healing, encouragement, and support. Trust that there is power in speaking your truth and sharing your experience with others, because you can have an impact or even save someone's life. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram to stay engaged in our Unspoken Conversations with Candace. And if you have been impacted by trauma and need tools to heal, consider purchasing a copy of my book titled Unspoken, available on Amazon. Thanks again, and remember, you're not alone.